Kia ora, welcome to episode 45 of the SWZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
First up, I just want to acknowledge that this podcast is coming out on a different day of the week. Moving forward, we will be releasing podcasts on Tuesdays instead of Fridays for a couple of reasons. One of those reasons, or perhaps the most significant of those reasons, is the fact that Disney Plus has moved their content release schedule from Fridays to Wednesdays. And by doing our podcasts on Tuesdays, we let everybody catch up on new content that has come out before we start talking about it. You have an opportunity to watch over the weekend if you can't do so during the week. This is in anticipation of a lot of content coming out from December onwards. We're expecting near continuous Star Wars content on Disney Plus for late December and most of 2022. Okay, sadly, we have to start off our news roundup with an announcement that Star Wars actor Gerald Holm passed away last week, October the 6th, which was Thursday, New Zealand time. We'd known Gerald for a very long time and worked with him on a number of different projects, including running his own website and some interviews on SWNZ. He was a longtime supporter of SWNZ, and over the many years that we'd worked together and I'd got to know him, we'd become quite close friends. So I just want to take a few moments to pay tribute to that, describe some of the work that we did with him as a way of sort of describing the man. Gerald was born in Belfast, Ireland, initially worked as a teacher in Australia before moving to London to study drama. He's got a long list of credits to his name, including theatre and mime performances, puppeteering. He was one of the operators of Audrey 2, The Man-Eating Plant and Little Shop of Horrors. He did TV commercials and shows and movies. And we've documented a lot of that on his official website, which you can still access at geraldholm.com. That's a website that we'll leave up as part of the tribute to his long acting career and his involvement in Star Wars, but also his involvement in the Star Wars fandom. On that website, which Gerald controlled down to the letter and sort of pixel practically, so we've left it intact as it stands. Gerald recounts his strongest memories from his acting career, with lots of photos along the way, but he also went to great lengths to interact with the Star Wars fan community, attending many, many conventions, and not just the conventions themselves, but hanging out with fan clubs and members of fan clubs, you know, after the actual conventions and so forth. And there's a huge array of photos on geraldholm.com sort of capturing that part of his experience. On swnz.co.nz, and I'll put links to these down below, back in 2004, we did a long, long interview with Gerald where we broke it down into three parts on the website to tell the story of his involvement in the filming of Return of the Jedi. And a big part of the basis of those interviews is actually talking about the call sheets and scripts that he had from his work on Return of the Jedi, which was back then called Revenge of the Jedi. It was filmed in 1982. But we walked through those call sheets and those scripts, and Gerald tells lots of stories in his own words. And I want to just encourage people to take a look at those if you haven't already. Many of you will have. But they do a very good job of, well, Gerald does a very good job of capturing the actual atmosphere of working on set, on those Star Wars sets. And it was a really, he was a great storyteller. Had a very, very strong memory for a lot of detail and was able to recount it, you know, decades later. And we've tried to convey that in some of those articles. And the call sheets and the scripts are a great vehicle to sort of do that. So if you haven't had a look at those, I'd encourage you to look at those and just sort of get immersed in Gerald's storytelling as a way of experiencing what he experienced on set when he was filming Revenge of the Jedi. Here's a few of the things that he said in those articles that I found particularly interesting. In the first article, what we've called Tales of the Lost Calamari, he talked about what it was like working on set with a mask that covers his full head. When you're in a mask, you think of things as a blind person might. How many steps to the right, what obstacles are in the way, etc. I had one terrifying bit, running from screen right to screen left, with a few other creatures around me and directions being shouted out to me. The trouble was, I knew the Rancor pit was open, and that I was very close to it. I obviously didn't want to fall in, but couldn't see. Any confusion apparent in the scene was very, very real. We talked a lot with Gerald along the way, by long email, but also by phone, and his attention to detail always sort of struck me. He could recall very specific details from his time filming and from all that, his time filming on Star Wars and pretty much everything else he ever did. So he always had stories to tell about the work he had done along the way and the adventures he'd done with the fan community. And that's something that I'll quite miss moving forward. Here's another snippet from one of those articles where he tells us about working with Phil Tippett. We were fantastically well taken care of by Phil Tippett and his team. Each of us had a dresser, minder, who whisked the masks off whenever possible. Also, they had hair dryers with which they used to give us air if there was a break in filming, but no time to take off the masks. Phil and his team treated us and the costume characters brilliantly, and I'm delighted for him and them that their creations are still popular all these years later. In those articles that Gerald contributed to, we also take a look at the call sheets. The call sheets are a fantastic way to look at everybody that was involved on the specific days of filming and the other aspects of the shooting for that day, the production for that day. We've got a couple of call sheets specifically that Gerald worked with, and yeah, we've got those in their entirety on SWNZ. Call sheet number 27, which refers to filming on Tuesday the 16th of February 1982. Jedi director Richard Marquand leads the first unit through the day's filming on the Rebel Cruiser interior set. So that would have been the scenes in which Gerald played the Mon Calamari officer who stood aside Admiral Ackbar for many of the scenes. And in fact, in one of the other articles, we take a look at a script where they experimented with Gerald's character actually having some dialogue. Gerald's character made an announcement in scene 125A that the shield around the Death Star has lost power. That's, of course, a crucial plot element. That line is later substituted by a similar one from Ackbar. The shield is down. Commence attack on the Death Star's main reactor. Part of the reason Gerald believes that switch took place was because it was a little bit experimental having his character, his Mon Calamari officer character, say that line. But he was working with a non-articulated mask, so presumably it didn't come across, didn't read quite as well on screen, and Admiral Ackbar went on to say that line. We also take a look at call sheet number 38, which refers to filming on Friday the 19th of February 1982. It's a second unit filming. The artists returning to the same Rebel frigate bridge on this day were Tim Rose, who played Admiral Ackbar, and Gerald Holm. George Lucas himself was on the filming on these second unit scenes. That's one of the fun aspects of this paperwork that Gerald retained from his filming days, including the call sheets. You can see the names and activities and tasks taken by a number of the other actors, big names that you'll recognise. Our interaction with Gerald to get these articles up on SWNZ back in late 2003, early 2004, were one of our first contacts with him, but we touched base with him many, many times along the way. We crossed paths with him at celebration conventions, and we visited him in his hometown of London when Christy and I happened to travel there in 2006. As I said, Gerald spent a lot of time not just interacting with fans at conventions, but also going out with dinner with them afterwards, or, you know, sort of attending other sort of roles as an honorary member of various costuming and fan clubs. And we were very pleased and privileged to have been able to spend time with him during conventions and outside of conventions, as well as working with him on content on his website and our website. And we're sure that he will be missed by many, many Star Wars fans around the globe. Okay, shifting tack a little bit to talk about some other new announcements. The really big announcement from our point of view, something we were really, well, has brought to attention some news that we're really quite excited about, was new Star Wars books coming out next year. StarWars.com has a list of 4 new Star Wars books coming out from June, and one of them is written by Adam Christopher, who is an author we have interviewed on SWNZ because he is a New Zealand-born author. He's currently living in the UK. But he was born in New Zealand and first saw Star Wars in New Zealand and identifies as a New Zealander. So very fun to have a Kiwi connection to these significant Star Wars books coming out. The first book on the list is Adam Christopher's book. It's entitled Shadow of the Sith. It's due out on June the 28th, 2022. And the point of time where this is set is quite exciting. Luke Skywalker and Lando Calrissian return in this essential novel set between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, and Adam Christopher confirms that this is set 21 years after the Battle of Yavin. We've got an interview with Adam Christopher up on SWNZ. This was an interview we conducted with him shortly after he wrote a chapter in the book Star Wars from a Certain Point of View. His chapter was called End of Watch. The Certain Point of View books, From a Certain Point of View books, have come out for the Star Wars film and the Empire Strikes Back film, in each instance on the 40th anniversary of those films' release. And if you haven't read them or you're not familiar with them, those are books that take a look at minor characters that appeared in those films and tells us their stories of the events of Star Wars from their points of views. They're quite fun books. They're akin to the Tales of books from the older Expanded Universe era. Adam also contributed a chapter to the Empire Strikes Back from a Certain Point of View book entitled The Witness, which focused on a stormtrooper, Dina Lorne. But just coming back to talk about the Shadow of the Sith book, due out next year. I'm really excited that this is set in the post-Return of the Jedi era in many ways, and it's starting to bridge the continuity between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy. And it's dealing with some really, really significant characters and events. So he's been really tasked with, you know, some big plot points to fill, but I'm excited about that. A lot of the other material that exists in this era is a little bit tangential. It's telling stories that describe what's going on in the galaxy, but doesn't really delve into necessarily what the big names are doing, and it certainly doesn't bridge the content strongly with the sequel trilogy. So I'm really, really excited for this book. Just want to read a little bit of the excerpt about this book in particular because I'm so keen for it. So this comes straight from StarWars.com. The Empire is dead. Nearly two decades on from the Battle of Endor, the tattered remnants of Palpatine's forces have fled to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. But for the heroes of the New Republic, danger and loss are ever-present companions, even in this newly forged era of peace. Jedi Master Luke Skywalker is haunted by visions of the dark side, foretelling an ominous secret growing somewhere in the depths of space on a dealed world called Exegol. The disturbance in the Force is undeniable, and Luke's worst fears are confirmed when his old friend Lando Calrissian comes to him with reports of a new Sith menace. After his daughter was stolen from his arms, Lando searched the stars for any trace of his lost child, but every new rumor only led to dead ends and fading hopes until he crossed paths with Oki of Bestoon, a Sith assassin tasked with kidnapping a young girl. Oki's true motives remain shrouded to Luke and Lando, for on a junkyard moon, a mysterious envoy of the Sith Eternal has bequeathed a sacred blade to the assassin, promising that it will give him answers to the questions that have haunted him since the Empire fell. In the exchange, he must complete a final mission, return to Exegol with the key to the Sith's glorious rebirth, the granddaughter of Darth Sidious himself, Rey. As Oki hunts Rey and her parents to the edge of the galaxy, Luke and Lando race into the mystery of the Sith's lingering shadow and aid a young family running for their lives. So like I say, big deal, big characters, big plot points that he's working with there.
Yeah, this is really exciting. Obviously, there is a lot sort of connecting threads and little details that the books and comics often add to the movies. I know that was a little bit of a sticking point for some people about the sequels, that it felt like there was a lot of information that was left out of the movies. But we're looking at it from the lens of the other films have had decades of extra books and extra comics. You know, we know all the random backstories to those bounty hunters that didn't say a word in the movies and things like that. We know everything about them. And so we're finally getting to the point in time where we're getting all that rich backstory for the characters and the story threads that we're seeing from the prequels. And I think this will give us a lot of really interesting information about the sort of Exegol and the Sith Eternal and what Luke and Lando were doing that we get sort of a quick glimpse at in The Rise of Skywalker. So I'm really excited to see the sort of fully fleshed out story that takes place prior to that film.
Yeah, for sure. So we focused a lot on that book coming from Adam Christopher, Shadow of the Sith, but that's not to say that we're not excited about the other ones as well. So let's just hit on those. Star Wars Brotherhood is another novel coming out by Mike Chen. This follows Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker amidst the chaos of the Clone Wars and Skywalker's rise to Jedi Knight.
I'm quite interested to see a book in the Clone Wars era. Sometimes I feel like they exhausted all the storytelling potential with the Clone Wars animated series, but it seems like there are still more sort of subtle stories to tell. And I think particularly the very intricate connected dynamic between Obi-Wan and Anakin is possibly one best told by book, because you get internal dialogue, thoughts and feelings that aren't essentially expressed in movies or animation. So I'm really keen to see, obviously with the title Brotherhood, it's going to be very focused on that dynamic and as it says, Anakin's rise to Jedi Knight. Obviously, he has sort of mixed emotions. We see him in a little bit of turmoil in episode 2. By the time episode 3 rolls around, they're a lot closer. So it'll be really interesting to see how they describe that in this book.
Okay, Star Wars Stories of Jedi and Sith is described as a new middle grade anthology. It features adventures from 10 acclaimed authors. So this is a collection of stories aimed at younger readers, but they will all be basically canon, and it's featured for focusing specifically on Jedi and Sith characters, as the name strongly implies. In the young adult novel category, Star Wars Padawan by Kirsten White depicts Obi-Wan in his early days as a student of Qui-Gon Jinn. Now, the young adult novels in particular, I think, are not ones to be dismissed. I think they're targeting a younger audience, but they're usually written at a level that's quite palatable, and particularly when they're focusing on key characters, are worth reading if you really enjoy just filling out your knowledge of the entirety of the Star Wars continuity. Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon's relationship has been covered in older books that have been targeting younger readers as well, haven't they? And so it's going to be interesting to see how this has worked with.
Yeah, in that sort of time period between episode 1 and 2, there was a long-standing series of sort of young reader, young adult books called the Jedi Apprentice series, which had a very sort of passionate fan base amongst adult readers because it really did dive deep into the relationship and the dynamic between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. It focused on a lot of sort of elements of the Jedi Master Padawan relationship that isn't really fully explored in The Phantom Menace, the idea that they can communicate through the Force, that they pick up on each other's emotions and things like that. So if you read those books and then go back and watch episode 1, you kind of, those looks to each other, you can sort of imagine what they are communicating, what they're expressing, and it makes sort of Obi-Wan's turmoil about Anakin and that sort of a little bit more interesting, knowing that Qui-Gon is fully aware of how Obi-Wan is reacting to this. So I'm really interested to see if they will sort of basically revisit that sort of dynamic in these new generation of novels. How much will they, if at all, will they reference any of the old novels, or is this kind of like a complete clean slate redo? But anyway, Obi-Wan is such a fascinating character with a lot to really explore and write about. And I'm keen to see them sort of delving into his early days, especially since we know that we've got a new series coming up exploring his later years.
Well, yeah, that's significant. I mean, there's a lot of focus on the Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker relationship in Clone Wars and in other material, and obviously coming up in the Kenobi series. But I'm looking forward to content that focuses on Qui-Gon Jinn. I think Qui-Gon Jinn was an interesting Jedi with slightly different perspectives from other Jedi, and I absolutely love the way he was portrayed by Liam Neeson in The Phantom Menace. So I'm quite keen to see a little bit more of the Obi-Wan Qui-Gon relationship, as well as the Obi-Wan Anakin Skywalker later relationships.
Yeah, there's that one moment in episode 3 where you know that Qui-Gon is the one that's kind of figured out how to come back through the Force and talk to Yoda and things like that. So I really wish we had more content sort of diving into his character, diving into Obi-Wan's sort of process of learning how to talk to Qui-Gon through the Force, and obviously eventually he himself learning to come back through the Force to communicate to Luke. There's so much more that they could tell us there about sort of those deeper sort of almost spiritual aspects to the Force, not just Force powers of pushing and things like that and combat.
If Liam Neeson has a cameo in the Kenobi series as a communicate, if Liam Neeson communicates with Ewan McGregor in the Kenobi series, it would just be mind-melting.
Yeah, fingers crossed for that. That would be like an awesome sort of fan moment and a really good little Easter egg sort of secret sort of surprise, because we know Hayden Christensen is in that series. That's not sort of spoilers there, but I would love to have some element of referencing Qui-Gon, if not actually having some sort of appearance, audio or visual or otherwise.
Imagine how the conversation would go. Obi-Wan having to explain to Qui-Gon what's gone on with Anakin since Qui-Gon's departure.
Yeah.
All right. So those are the books that have been announced on StarWars.com. But we've also heard that there is a junior novel that is a tie-in to the Star Wars Hunter mobile game. We've talked about the Star Wars Hunters mobile game a few podcasts back. This is one that's not out yet. It's coming up on both iOS and Android platforms. And it's a Fortnite-style PvP player versus player game, just at the highest level. But it involves new random characters that aren't tied to the main continuity, the main canon. It's interesting that there is a tie-in novel coming out for that. That's expected in June 2022 from author Mark Oshiro. And the other aspect of that announcement is that a tie-in novel to a game gives me a little more confidence that effort is put in, stock has been put into this game. The threat of Star Wars games not being supported over a long time is a threat that we've talked about a lot in recent podcasts and distant past podcasts, in fact, because it's a recurring theme with a lot of the app games. I don't want to dwell on it too much again, but with a bit of luck, this is a good sign.
It's always a shame when they create new games, new content with really sort of interestingly designed characters. As you say, this game has original designs, like specific stormtroopers, specific bounty hunters that don't appear in other content yet. And so it always seems a little bit of a shame when these, so much work has been put into developing some really interesting characters visually and sort of conceptually, and then the game dies and then that's it. And it seems like such a wasted potential. So at least this way we've got like a novel to sort of use.
Well, this game in particular is a player versus player format, so it's not a story, it's not a storytelling role-playing type game, so that I assume you're going to start with these characters as they are without a lot of necessary backstory. So this is an interesting way to build on that, give us additional content related to that. Okay, still loosely tied to the topic of books, an article we put up on sdnz.co.nz since the last podcast is another chapter in our ongoing look at the New Zealand Women's Weekly Star Wars comics that appeared in each issue of the New Zealand Women's Weekly magazine between 1979 and 1984. Most recently, we look at the adaptation of Han Solo at Star's End, which came out in 1981 in the New Zealand Women's Weekly Comics. This is an 18-page installment, so one of the biggest story arcs amongst that comic series. It was scripted by Archie Goodwin and illustrated by comic artist Alfredo Alcala. It kicks off on the 5th of January 1981, spans pages 84 to 101 of the overall comic collection. And it's a high point in the New Zealand Women's Weekly Comic series because it's an adaptation of one of the very early expanded universe novels. Han Solo at Star's End by Brian Daley came out after Splinter of the Mind's Eye, but it was another one of those books that I just personally consumed and read over and over and over again. So it was really exciting to see how artists and sort of interpreted the characters and content of that particular book. It's a story that features the pre-episode 4 adventures of Han Solo and Chewbacca, a very interesting point in time at the time that it came out. So that's up on swnz.co.nz. In the random news category, if you're a user of Amazon Alexa or Echo devices, something that's coming out in 2022 is an add-on that they're referring to as Hey Disney, where instead of referring to these devices via Alexa-based commands, you can access Disney-specific content using the Hey Disney command. So it's going to be interesting that you'll be able to get responses from Star Wars characters to Star Wars-related questions in particular. So if you're a user of Amazon Alexa or Echo devices or other Alexa devices, you'll be able to access this at a small cost. It's rolling out in the US initially, but these are global devices, so we're presuming it will be available globally. And again, on a completely different topic, in Lucasfilm Star Wars employee news, a couple of Industrial Light and Magic employees that have returned to the Industrial Light and Magic fold. Rob Coleman and Randall Shaw rejoin ILM, boosting future animation offerings. I find this personally interesting because Rob Coleman's actually quite a big name from a certain era in Star Wars, and it's fun to know that he's come back. He's returning as the key creator for feature animation at ILM's Sydney studio. He was employed by ILM between 93 and 2005, and then Lucasfilm Animation between 2005 and 2007. He directed episodes of the Clone Wars television series. He's also a two-time Oscar nominee for his animation work on Star Wars The Phantom Menace and Star Wars Attack of the Clones. And he's also famously the namesake for the Jedi character Colman Trebor, who appeared in episode 2 as a full CG character. A little bit of interesting backstory. He appeared in fight scenes, but also in the Jedi Council, which was made up of stock footage from The Phantom Menace. And Trebor, the Jedi character, was digitally painted over Yariel Poof, who was replaced as George Lucas felt the audience would confuse him with the newly introduced Kaminoans. So Rob Coleman's a name we're familiar with as a strong contributor to Star Wars material in the past, and it's quite fun to know that he is coming back as a contributor in that way. Randall Shaw is also returning to the company's Vancouver studio as an executive producer in feature animation. Quite a fun week for product announcements and store reports this past week. First on our list is the announcement of The Art of Star Wars Visions coming out via Dark Horse Comics, arriving in April next year by author Zach Davison. This is a 200-page book. This is hot on the heels of The Art of the Mandalorian Season 2, which I think at the time we talked about it, we speculated or hoped in some way that we might see a Star Wars Visions Art of book, and here it is, not surprisingly in some ways. So presumably this is going to cover a lot of actual behind-the-scenes developmental material from each of the different anime studios that contributed to the Star Wars Visions series on Disney+.
I kind of expected something like this to launch at the same time.
Or at least it announcement, yeah.
It almost kind of feels like they had a whole array of merch and they were kind of holding off to see how well it would be received. But it does seem weird to launch merchandise like socks and t-shirts as opposed, you know, at first and then wait on a book. So I don't know if there's just like production delays or why this
book's coming out in April next year.
Yeah. So it's not like they've had it in production because I would have thought you'd have a book like this ready to sell with sort of the publicity push of the launch of it. You know, you liked this, now go spend money over here. You know, not everyone wants t-shirts of all the sort of obscure little side series. You know, there's enough apparel and merchandise from main storyline, you know, things like The Mandalorian and of course the saga films. So this one sort of feels like maybe because it's a sort of a higher price point, they sort of held off on it. We've seen some, when it came to the sort of Marvel What If series, we saw some high price point merch ready to launch as soon as the episodes had screened. Things like Captain Carter, 12-inch figures from Hot Toys and things like that. So it's a little bit odd that it's giving me the impression that they weren't exactly sure how well this would be received. And they're like, oh, yep, it was a success. Okay, let's push out, you know, the Art of book and stuff like that. It sort of feels like they're pressing go publish right now as opposed to having this in the pipeline, you know, ready to hit store shelves at the same time as
the timing could have been a little bit earlier. But either way, I'm excited about this as a fun topic. It was something we're looking forward to. And it's coming from Dark Horse Comics, which is not the usual publisher of the Art of books, but it will be good quality coming from them. New York Comic Con has been taking place recently and a series of Funko Pop vinyl figures were announced as part of that. Only one in the Star Wars line, but it's a character we're very happy to be, that singular one. A New York Comic Con exclusive Boba Fett as the Tatooine Nomad Pop is his first appearance in Star Wars The Mandalorian, is out and available from local retailers, including Mighty Ape. Mighty Ape have it for $27. And numbers will be limited, and numbers that you can purchase at any one time will be limited. So if you're a Boba Fett fan, if you're a Temuera Morrison fan, if you're a Mandalorian fan or a pop vinyl collector, grab that soon. It's a pre-order at this point. It'll be coming out shortly.
I love the modern Funko exclusive sort of structure that, yeah, in the US, it's kind of like an exclusive for this convention, but they don't actually lock it down to conventions. They understand that Funkos are highly sought after, particular, you know, ones with the exclusive label. I like that us international fans get a valid and, you know, realistic opportunity to buy these. They're just only a couple of dollars higher than a standard Funko, which kind of, you know, would be befitting. You know, if you're actually in New York, you would have to be paying for, you know, your hotel, your convention tickets and stuff like that. So convention exclusive items always have this kind of additional cost onto it. But the fact that we can buy these at local retailers without having to go through the hurdles of tracking these things down from resellers on eBay is just brilliant. I'm really happy that us as New Zealand fans, we can get the convention exclusives from Funko. I wish Hasbro would take on that sort of viewpoint to make it fair on all the international fans, but at least for now, Funko is getting a big thumbs up from international fans for the way that they structure their convention exclusives.
Yeah, indeed. Kudos to Funko. That's a model that we'd like to see other manufacturers take with their Star Wars product if they're going to stick with exclusives in that sort of hype marketing. At the cheaper price point from the warehouse, we haven't seen these in a while. A Star Wars advent calendar, a Star Wars chocolate advent calendar, no less, featuring The Mandalorian, $4 at the warehouse, available online. We'll put a link for that below as well. From Spotlight, there is a discount on a series of canvas prints that they have available, three different designs priced at $18 each. Quite large, sort of 80cm prints on wooden frames, three different designs featuring Baby Yoda and also a cartoony alphabet style print.
These are great designs if you're just wanting something sort of cheap and easy to put around the home that feels a little bit more elevated than a standard printed paper poster. They're ready to go, ready to hang with just a simple nail on the wall or a 3M hook.
The designs feel like they're good for kids' rooms too, I think.
Yes.
One of them is, as I say, an alphabet print.
Yes.
It's not the full alphabet for some reason, but it's got fun cartoony representations of a bunch of characters.
That one, I feel like that's the sort of fun one for children's rooms or nurseries if you're raising young Padawans. And of course, the Baby Yoda, that's universally loved. That's going to go anywhere in the house. And $18, that's only just a little bit more of a higher price point compared to paper poster. So these are great if you're looking for something to pick up at a cheap price point that are just going to be a fun addition to your wall decor.
In the completely random Star Wars product categories is a Star Wars basketball from Cotton On / Typo, priced at $49.99. This is a size 7 standard basketball. Quite a fun design though. Plain black basketball with the Star Wars logo on one side and the full opening crawl on the other side. Sounds a little bit odd at first glance, but in some ways it's kind of a fun product.
Yeah, I'm not a basketball player as such, but I think this is such a fun item. We know that there is a lot of sort of Star Wars workout gear out there in the world. Adidas has been making shoes for a long time. You can get all sorts of t-shirts and tank tops and all sorts of Yoda-inspired motivational workout gear and stuff like that. But I like the realm of sort of fitness equipment with Star Wars touches in it. Basketball is sort of popular internationally, even if you don't play full games, just the idea of, you know, shooting hoops. And that is,
this is possibly more designed as a display item. If you happen to be a basketball fan or a basketball player and a Star Wars fan and want to display something that conveys the intersection of your fandoms, intersection of your hobbies, then this is probably the sort of person that this is targeting. From the warehouse over the past week, now just a precursor note, these are not available at the time of recording, but I'm just going to talk about them anyway. Over the past week, we have seen the vintage style droids, vintage collection figures, up for pre-order at the warehouse. So that's Boba Fett, C-3PO, and RTD2 on cardbacks, 3.75-inch figures on cardbacks that recreate the droids line, and also a range of the new exclusive carbonized Black Series 6-inch figures, a Shaw Trooper, a Scout Trooper, and the Paz Vizsla Heavy Mandalorian figure. They were all up for pre-order on the warehouse during the week. At the time of recording, they are no longer available, and we're presuming that this means that they sold out of their allocation, but they may restock, they may get more in. We're not 100% clear. The take-home message from this, I think, is that we try and report on these things as soon as that information becomes available. We share it on the SWNZ website, as well as Facebook and other social media, and talk about it in our Facebook group. But this is an instance where you kind of got to be quick or you miss out. So if you're an avid collector of these sort of things, I think that's the only take-home message we can offer is that there's a number of different avenues you need to sort of keep in touch with to sort of make sure you're on top of these as soon as they're available.
Particularly with these repackaged sort of special edition ones, you're never quite sure whether they're going to be peg warmers because they're variations that people don't want, or they're going to be highly sought after in much smaller numbers. And it, by some indication, it might mean that these ones were imported in smaller quantities than normal.
Well, they were all up for pre-order, and this is the first time the warehouse has done action figure pre-orders online, so they might be testing the water with smaller volumes. We'll see how that pans out. But there were figures that we talked about, the droids carded figures in particular, were interesting figures that we talked about a number of times, and we're looking for a local retailer, and warehouse has stepped up.
We also don't know if by the mid-December point whether we will actually see these on shelves at physical stores. Obviously, for many of us around the country, we are unable to visit physical warehouse stores, but fingers crossed by December, that might be an option for us. So we don't know whether they just had a small allotment for the website and each physical store will get a caseload. So if you're one of the people that missed out on this pre-order, fingers crossed that we will see a larger inventory available at physical stores, or that once they arrive in stock, we will see them again on the website.
Yes, it's entirely possible that they had separate allocations for the online store and each the local branches. On that note, though, I guess that's about it for today's installment. So I guess we are done doing talking. If you have any thoughts on topics we discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or our website page for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week and every Tuesday. And don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Kia ora, kia noho, ho maru. Thank you for listening and stay safe.
Tūro hawaiki. May the Force be with you.